We do have a quorum, but I was going to wait until 1 o'clock. Welcome,
Sorry.
Lynn. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum and we are ready to start the meeting.
All right, fantastic. I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order and just say welcome to everyone to our February edition of our ITAC meeting. I will take a moment after we do our roll call to acknowledge some of our new members that we have joining us. I want to thank them for them giving their time to our efforts here. But with that, let's go ahead and I will ask the question. Well, actually, go ahead and do the roll call, please.
Okay. Representative Michael Carbone. Okay. Jagadasan Krishnamurthy.
Present. Present.
Brian Kirkland. Eddie Cook.
Here.
Nathan Young.
Present.
Christine Ward in for Jennifer Toth.
Present.
Ben Henry.
Here.
David Byers.
Here.
J.R. Sloan.
Present.
John Rome in for Lev Gonick.
Present.
Richard Stavnik.
Jeff Paulson here for Richard.
Okay. And Ryan Murray. Okay. We are ready, JR.
All right. Thank you. Again, Christine, Ben, and also Nate, thank you for joining. I'm glad to have you on the committee. Appreciate, I'll say proactively, I'm going to appreciate your input in the process here. You know, it's an important task that we have to, I think, help steward the resources and help these significant projects to help guide them, ensure that they're ready for success. So that's it's a team effort here. With that, let's go ahead and I'll ask the question. Do we get any conflict of interest forms submitted, team?
No, we did not.
Okay. I will go ahead and remind the members, if as we approach any item on the agenda, if you feel you have a concern or a potential conflict of interest, please raise your hand and we'll talk about it and we'll take appropriate action. If necessary, we can fill out the paperwork to note that after the fact, but we'll go ahead and acknowledge it for the official meeting minutes as well. I will go ahead and remind the public that this is a public meeting format and we do comply with public meeting law. We have an opportunity for you to submit comments that's included on the agenda. You can click the link to submit your comment and the staff will disposition your inquiry. With that, we'll go ahead and step into our first item of business, which is the approval of the January 17th recording as our minutes of our prior meeting. So any discussion on that point? And if there's none, I will take a motion with regard to the recording.
Mr. Chair, this is Eddie. I move to approve the minutes for January.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
Second, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, great. Item one down. Next item, we do have a consent agenda today. So these are items that we will not be going into detailed review on. There's only one item on consent. We will handle all of this one item as in one motion. So unless anyone has reason that they would like to pull this off consent, this would be the time to note that. Otherwise, I'll take a motion with regard to our consent agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the consent calendar agenda items as approved or as presented.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. Do we have a second?
Chairman, this is Jaggi. I'll second.
Thank you, Jaggi. All right, again, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And again, any abstentions? All right, thank you. We're two down. Let's get to the meat of things. Our first item where we were going to get a presentation is coming to us from Access on their mainframe refactor. Over to you, team.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I'm an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, also known as Access, who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Access is currently utilizing a mainframe-based application to support their core business operations, including their prepaid medical management system and Hawaiian prepaid medical management system, also known as PMMIS and HPMMIS. Due to the mainframe technology supporting PMMIS and HPMMIS, changes to the system are time-consuming and complicated, and limit configuration capabilities exist within the current system. Access intends to discontinue their reliance on the mainframe to reduce the operational costs associated with maintaining the applications on this platform by migrating these mainframe systems to the Azure Cloud platform. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am Dan Lippert. I'm the Assistant Director and Chief Information Officer for the Information Services Division at Access. With me today, I have Anthony Flott, the Chief Technology Officer, and Joshua Worley. He is our Deputy Assistant Director for Business and Finance. Next slide, please. I'm going to start with the project structure. This is a good-sized project. We want to make sure we have the right structure to help manage this project. We have an executive steering committee. You'll also notice to the left hand of the slide on the top, we have oversight by you all, ITAC and JLBC. We will be asking JLBC for some funds for this. And on the governance side, we are required to have IBNV by both the federal standards and state standards. So our IVNV will report to both ADOA and to CMS. They'll be getting the reports at the same time. And then you'll see the typical project structure under that. ISD project management services, program managers, project managers, architects, that sort of thing. So that is a pretty typical structure for us. The big things to point out are the IVNV and how that will report. Next slide, please. So Access has been running a mainframe system that it developed itself. And the development started in 1987, was cutting edge technology in 1990 when it went live. We are not in 1990 any longer. But we are still using the same technology. The technology works to some degree. There's two big issues. One is it is very difficult to find people who can still program in this language. So we need to be able to be on something more modern where we can find more resources. Also, we need the ability to be able to plug in more current technology. So first order of business is to discontinue our reliance on the mainframe. This project will take the mainframe that we have now. It will refactor it to C# and SQL. So both PMMIS and HPMMIS will be converted over into those technologies. We will be able to run this system on those new technologies. We believe running this could save up to 45% on our current costs, as well as giving us newer, more enhanced features in that we will be able to connect to different technologies. And it is very difficult to be tied to a mainframe technology now. It takes longer to bring things to market, and it's harder and harder to find talent. Next slide, please. So I will now turn it over to Anthony Flott for the proposed solution.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you, Dan. So our proposed solution is a combination of essentially we're going to replicate exactly what we do today. We're just going to refactor the mainframe into a newer code base, as Dan had already walked through, right? Again, we're looking at a C-sharp .NET with a SQL database engine. This would be a completely cloud design. This would be run in the cloud. And as such, we believe, again, Dan had mentioned, we believe we'll see a cost savings in doing so. We'll also be able to attract talent, again, as mentioned, in ways that we haven't before. The testing for this is going to be extensive. This is our system of record, not just for one state, but for two. And so as a system of record for both Medicaid platforms, this has huge impacts, right? And so we're going to need extensive testing to get through this. And then lastly, we'll have post-production support from the vendor in doing a, you know, informal knowledge transfer throughout the project, but then also on turnover, right? Because we need to maintain this, again, I will highlight, for two states, right? Not just one. So next slide, please. If you've been around for our previous ITAG journeys, this slide should be familiar. When we first developed our MES roadmap a couple years ago, this was one of our system diagrams that outlined all of our systems and how it kind of plugs in. The SI was one of the platforms we went to ITAC on last year, and you can see that's going to be used already, right? We're currently in process of standing that up, and more services are coming on board each month here. You'll notice that the red boxes are what we're specifically talking about for this project, though, right? And so that is the HPMMIS and the PMMIS. And so, again, we've highlighted those in red, and that's how they'll plug in. And that's how it looks in our overall system diagram from an access perspective. Next slide, please. For the project responsibilities, I'm going to throw it back over to Dan.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, one of the things you'll see that is consistent throughout all of our presentations to ITAC is we want to make sure we're maintaining project contract oversight. We will be doing the vendor management, and we will be sharing project management, but Access will have the final authority over the project management. The other big point to mention here is number two. We're going to supply the technology, environment, and network connectivity. So this will be done in a state-owned, Access-owned Azure cloud environment. We will hold the keys to that. This is something that you will see consistent across many of the things we're doing. We want to make sure that we are in control of our intellectual property in any of our data. This puts us at the top level of control. So this will be hosted by us for this project. And of course, we'll have the user acceptance testing and things like that as our responsibility. Under shared, it's project management, testing, and training and delivery. For the contractor, the actual refactoring will be the primary responsibility of the vendor, as is the Azure cloud design. I mentioned that it will be our cloud, but we can use the vendor within that cloud to help design the cloud to make it the most efficient for the type of work we're doing. They're also going to be doing system testing, data verification. And number four is very important as well, post-production support. So once we're done, it's not like the vendor disappears. We will still have that post-production support period as we are stabilizing a system of this size. Next slide. So for project timeline, I'm turning it back over to Anthony Flott.
Thank you, Dan. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's hard to, in a one slide project timeline, convey a 2-year project, but that's what we try to do here. So I will walk through this as best I can and hopefully convey, you know, exactly what's happening here. To start off, you'll notice that the kind of first three items there, planning, sprint planning, and pilot, I would call these kind of the assessment phase. We did an assessment on the mainframe a couple years ago when we started looking at this project. However, it's been a couple years, and obviously there was changes that needed to be made. During that planning, sprint planning and pilot, we're going to be doing an assessment again to baseline where we're at exactly, get that stuff outlined, and then start putting together the overall project plan with the sprint, with the sprints and the applications included in those sprints. As I go down one, database refactors next on that list. This one is huge. This is going to take our Datacom backend on the mainframe today, convert it to SQL, and it's going to have a real-time sync between the two. What that's going to allow us to do is plug in things immediately in 2024 to that new SQL database so we can get some real-time transactions going, whether we want to use this for, you know, fraud, waste, abuse, real-time transactions, et cetera, we'll have the ability to do that. It's an ability we don't have today. As Dan mentioned, almost all of our processes on the mainframe are batch-related. And as you can, you know, I'm sure you guys are aware, there are certain things that just don't function well in batch-related processes, and we do need some real-time capabilities. And so that's why that's important. I want to spend some time on that. Next, you'll see the largest portion here. This is, you know, a 2-year chunk for the most part of migration refactor. This is really getting into the core of our applications. We have about 1,600 applications written in IDEAL. And so those need to be refactored to a C# code base in order for them to run in the cloud. That will require extensive regression testing, extensive UAT testing, et cetera, as we do those migrations. As we do the migration, we sign off on it. We then have to put those blocks in place on the mainframe, right? So that we know they're done, we've moved on, and then those apps are now functioning in the new live environment. You'll notice that UAT is a small chunk, but really it's going to be happening throughout the process, and then again at the end for the full system regression testing or UAT testing. The deployment tab there, we're going to be continually deploying this code, and that's why it's the long block there as well. So again, very similar to that, you know, kind of sprint release throughout those 2 years, we're going to be constantly doing more and more applications. And that kind of rinse, repeat, right? Refactor, test, implement, and then keep going. Training, we've actually already started training for some of our staff, getting some of our IDEAL and Datacom folks trained up on SQL and .NET. And so throughout this process, we intend to have some of our leads embedded with the team, the vendor who's doing this work, so they can pick up on the sprint schedules, how this works in C#. Again, we've been doing development on the mainframe for 30 years. We're really good at it. And it's a waterfall process. We are not used to agile. We're not used to sprints. And so this will be a learning process, not just in the new code base, but also a new way of getting this stuff to market faster. Lastly, you'll see the go live and the CMS certification. So, go live is pretty straightforward, and CMS certification, we need to run the system for a certain amount of time before they'll certify that it's running correctly. It can be in production during that time, but you do need to wait the amount of time before it's certified. So I said a lot there. Hopefully I was able to convey that properly. Next slide. This slide goes to the project cost, and I'm going to throw this over to Joshua. Joshua?
Hi, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. So as we said in the last slide, development will run through the end of fiscal year 26. Total development costs are about $56.3 million, with annual ongoing operational costs for maintenance and operations of $19.3 million after that. Next slide, please. So as is typical for development projects for Access, the federal government is going to share 90% of the total costs of development. And then that remaining 10% will be split between Hawaii and Arizona. So you'll see here the $56 million, about $50.5 million is going to be fed, with $2.8 million of that coming from the APF for the Arizona side and the remainder from Hawaii. The ongoing costs are going to be 75% federal, with 25% coming from the states. And that state share is being roughly split a quarter Hawaii and three quarters Arizona. Next slide, please. And I'm going to pass it back to Dan Lippert.
Chairman and members of the committee, what does success look like? Well, ideally, we'll be off ideal. Couldn't resist, sorry. I say that in jest, but it really is important. How many people in the audience have heard of IDEAL? Unless you've been to an ITAC presentation and we've mentioned our mainframe, you probably haven't. It is a dying technology. It is also owned by a vendor who really likes to raise prices on a regular basis. CA Datacom, not many people are using that as well. So by being able to get off Datacom, that hasn't had updates to its functionality in over 6 years, and off of IDEAL, we're going to go from a situation where it could take up to 8 months. Actually, I've seen it take over a year to hire a DBA, to something that, to maybe 4 to 6 weeks to hire somebody in SQL and C Sharp. I have to say now, we never find IDEAL programmers to hire. They're all COBOL programmers that we teach IDEAL to. I might be over-exaggerating a bit with all, but probably not by much. So this will mean that we can use talent that is potentially fresh out of school. We have just a much bigger talent pool to pull from. And it lines us up for things that are really important. Anthony mentioned previously about real-time connections. Current mainframe platform, despite what CA will tell you, does not have the ability to do real-time connections with any sort of new modern systems. Think about the situation that Access is in right now. We are in a situation where we're having significant issues with fraud, waste, and abuse. None of the current software for program integrity that attacks the fraud, waste, and abuse can interface with mainframe technology. Now, if you go back to, we don't have to literally do it, but think back to the timeline. One of the very first things we do is we refactor that database. As soon as we refactor that database, we now have a database that we can plug modern systems into. These systems can assist us in any number of things. It could be fraud, waste, and abuse systems. It could be data analytics software. It could be AI. It could be any of these. Things that are very difficult, if not impossible, to take advantage of now. And we are at our most vulnerable now, and we need to get started on getting modern technology so that we can, one, compete and provide our clients with the service they need, and two, to fight the fraud, waste, and abuse that we have been dealing with. So that is why we structured the timeline the way we did, get that database up and running right away, then convert the code later. And that's what success will look like for us. We'll have reduced costs because of the costs are about the same, but we'll have a reduction in, because of we'll be able to find programmers. We won't have that issue, and also we'll be able to interface with modern technology. All right. Now it's time for questions.
All right, I will open it up to the committee. Go ahead, Jeffrey. You're muted.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Okay. You mentioned you're going to have the $2.8 million request from the APF. Are you guys looking at the HHIS allocation from this last year's budget that I think you guys got $2 million for your other project? Is that sort of the same bucket of money you're looking at or a new appropriation?
I'll let Joshua take that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Paulson. So the $2 million was for separate projects that we've already brought to ITAC, ServiceNow, and System Integrator. This is new APF funding.
But you'd be looking at that. So there was that $2 million came from a $15 million deposit into the what we call the HHIS sub-account. And so that $2 million for those other project was allocated from that amount. I'm just making sure that's the sort of pool of money you're planning to look at for this new $2.8 million. And also in addition to that, are you looking at that? We have our upcoming meeting probably in April. Is that sort of the timeline you're looking at coming to JLBC for the review of those monies? Or are you thinking further down the line?
Mr. Chairman and Joshua, if you don't mind, I'll jump in here for the record on the recording. Chuck Brown, Deputy CIO from the state out of ADOA. And Mr. Paulson, the short answer is yes. The APF funding that ADOA has been working through with Access for this particular project need is coming out of that Health and Human Services designated $15 million, $2 million of which is already designated to Access. So the money for this will be on top of that. We are putting together the paperwork to go to JLBC as soon as possible. We know the April meeting is out there, but once we get through our internal process, we'll be reaching out to you on timing.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, I think I lost order. Go ahead, Mr. Byers.
Now, can you go back to that financial slide? Yeah, I'm not sure I'm understanding the top part of the slide. I thought you said the project costs are $56 million, the bottom right corner. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Byers, the development costs, which would cover through FY26, that development is $56 million. But there are ongoing maintenance and operations costs that we have included in these slides. So that additional ongoing maintenance and operations is that $58 million difference you see on the top table.
Okay, that's what was confusing me. So that's the ongoing over what, 5 years?
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, Mr. Byers, we have 5 years of the project, the first 2 years of development, and then there are 3 years of maintenance and operations on this table.
Okay, then there's a second financial slide. Can you go to that one? Okay, so the vendor is going to get $100 million over 5 years. I see, 5 year period. Okay, thanks. Thanks for the clarification.
All right, go ahead, Nate.
I've got a couple security related questions. Has there been any security assessments done on the design of the new refactored application? And then on top of that, what are the security assessment plans for when you're about to head into production?
Sorry, we had a fire truck going by. Anthony, do you want to take the first stab at that one?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Young.
So yeah, we absolutely have to work through both of those items. So the first thing is we're going to replicate what we do today, but when we put it into the Azure tenant, we'll definitely have to go through what's called MARSI. It's a CMS certification, minimal acceptable risk for standards and exchanges. It's a combination of NIST and HIPAA. And so essentially you have to put in the right protections, the right, do your security scans, all of that thing, right? So we'll make sure that it adheres to, at minimum, the MARSI standard. We also have to go through a third-party assessment for the certification. So we will have a third party come in and do the testing throughout this. And then also at the end to validate that we have, one, met those standards and we're complying with the MARSI certification as CMS has outlined. I think that answered both your questions, but please let me know if I missed one.
And are those certification standards also relating to any third-party vendors with, you know, maybe API or plugin integrations?
Absolutely. So every single vendor that we do business with and that has the access to, again, data that's been validated by CMS also has to go through the MARSI certification. That includes internal state partners as well. And so we have vetted those, or we will vet any new partners that we add onto the system, and any current partners are already going through that process.
Okay, great. That's all I have.
And Mr. Young, one point to add to that. The MARSI certification follows the data. So anywhere that data is used has to be MARSI certified, and we will make sure that we're meeting all of those requirements.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Go ahead, Mr. Henry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, great job presenting. And so I apologize. I'm a little late to the game. I just had a couple of questions, and a little of it's just the curiosity of it. Great job on the timeline and everything else. How long did it take you guys to get here is one of the questions. And then obviously access is one of the huge, and we get it on the cabinet updates, everything else with the fraud. How many customers are you serving now? And obviously this is internal customers. And that testing, is that strictly for internal or is that for external as well?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Henry, thank you for that question. It took us, our roadmap took us about a year and a half. So there is a published roadmap on our site. So we've been looking at this for the last 2 years or so. We serve external customer-wise, about 2.2 million members, about 90 to 100,000 providers. And internal customers, there are about 1,200 to 1,400 people. So the testing for any of the internal components will be done with internal resources, like to make sure a claim pays correctly, to make sure a prior auth comes through appropriately. There will also be some testing with external parties. We'll be doing a presentation next about EDI, and so you'll want to make sure those EDI transactions work with this as well. So there will be some external, but mainly internal.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Henry, I'd like to also call out, we were actually looking at mainframe refactoring for, I'd probably say about 7 years now, and we've gone through a myriad of ways to try to get this done. It wasn't until recently with some newer machine learning and AI algorithms that we found something that looked, we'll say, palatable. Most of our discussions in the, you know, 5-6 years ago were around a 7-year development and conversion life cycle. So up to 7 years, most of them were between 5 and 7 years. So just to kind of highlight, we've actually been looking at this for a while. And then as part of our roadmap, we found that the environment had changed and there was better technology out there that could meet our needs. So I wanted to throw that out there as well.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, before we move into the conditions and voting, just some housekeeping. I want to acknowledge the committee member, Ryan Murray, joined about 25 minutes ago and has been present for the presentation. I know he wasn't at roll call, but I just want that on the record since our minutes are recorded, not written.
Thank you. I have a question of mine or a couple questions. Could we drive back to the timeline slide, please? First one, and this could be Dan or Anthony. During the CMS certification phase, do you have to run the existing mainframe solution in parallel during that, or is the expectation that you've ceased operations there and are now fully on your new system at that point?
Mr. Chairman, there is not a requirement to run parallel. We will have a parallel running to make sure that it is everything is working as anticipated. I'm pretty sure our IV&V would require it as well, just to make sure. The certification period, they have it's part of CMS requirements called MITA, Medicaid Information Technology Assessment. You have a certain set of objectives that every system has to meet. So what you have to do is come up with metrics and standards to prove that that system is meeting those objectives. One of the ways to do that would be to run in parallel, and another way would be, and we'll probably have both, another would be to show these are the anticipated outcomes and that the system is meeting those outcomes. Anthony, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, the only thing I would add, Dan, Mr. Chair, is we are also a provider. We partner with the state of Hawaii, and so we absolutely are erring on the side of caution because, this is two states and two states' Medicaid agencies, right? So we will absolutely do our due diligence to make sure we're not impacting not just Arizona, but also Hawaii with a key service.
All right, thank you. And then my next question is, you know, I look at the big refactor, we'll call it the blob in the middle, and I'm looking for handles that you probably have thought about in terms of, you know, over that 18-month period, you know, what indicators are you going to have that you're tracking to plan versus you're encountering a problem? Can you talk a little bit about, again, I think you said you're planning a sprint, agile-based approach. Are you going to be using, the traditional burn-down artifacts and that type of thing?
Mr. Chairman, I'll take the high-level overview of that, and then I'll turn it to Anthony for some more detail. The current MMIS that we are running has about 1,600 individual programs. So we will be able to mark progress as we convert each of those programs. One of the things that any project has to be careful of, and what you're alluding to, is we don't want to wait that 18 months and see in 18 months that we've got something that doesn't quite work. So we'll be devising testing and different types of reviews between all of the different 1,600 programs that have to be converted. It also shows us, as something is converted, it gives us a level of documentation that we can use to refer to and then run that by both business units and the technical teams to make sure that that documentation meets the intent, and then we can use different testing methods to make sure that the documentation is accurate to what the system is performing.
Yep. Mr. Chair, if I may as well, part of that first 3 months planning, sprint planning and pilot, when we do the assessment, we're going to look at our higher utilization rates on the applications within the mainframe. And we're going to prioritize those up front to try to get through essentially what are the more complex and the we'll call them the heavy hitters, right? The most used applications, because as you can imagine, out of all 1600, there are some that are less frequently used and some that are more frequently used. As we build out our sprint plan, we're going to take that into consideration where we're hitting some of those highly used ones and then funneling in some of the lesser used ones. And we're going to try to stick with, as I mentioned, a 1 month sprint cycle. So it might be 3 weeks on, 1 week testing. And then we do our burn down list based on the priority list that we set in those first 3 months. Right. So we know the list of applications we want to get to. We'll assign workloads to them. And then as we do our sprint planning, we'll take in the smaller workload applications to make sure we're staying on track and we get through what we plan to get through in the timeline allotted here.
All right, thank you. Eddie, I saw your hand go up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be, you're moving from ideal to SQL. And I think about all of the potential legacy data, customer data, and so forth. Can you share with me two questions? One, how do you verify and validate the data that's in IDEAL versus going into the new platform is going to be, you know, the same? And then secondly, is there any need to go back to the old system when you're on the new platform to retrieve data or recover data?
Anthony, do you want to take the first shot at that one? I know you have some plans around that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cook, it's a great question. And so part of that database refactor when we stand it up is to put it in parallel with the its datacom is the database on the mainframe, is to put that in sync with that datacom database. And the reason for that is we're not going to get through all these applications right away. So we need a way to get new data through SQL back down into the current mainframe so that we can still run the applications and the processes that are on the mainframe today that allow us to get business done. Part of why we went with the vendor selected is their technology that allows us to do that is unlike what we've seen before. We'll be relying on them to set up that connection with their IP, their intellectual property, to make that happen. The verification process, to your point, is huge because we're going from essentially a relational to a non-relational database or vice versa. And so there will be some changes in the way that data is structured. You're absolutely right. And so it will be incumbent on us to have a verification that shows, okay, data from here got there and it's exactly what we expected it to look like. It will not be in the same format, for lack of a better word. But again, we've had the vendor do a sample of our data, and they showed us how this process plays out, how they do the validation. And we had our DBAs and architects look at that, and as well as the state of Hawaii, and we all agreed it came through clean. It was what we expected to see, and so we feel pretty confident that they have the ability to do this. Hopefully, that answers your question. Please let me know if I need to clarify.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your answer,
Anthony. Just maybe as a finer point on the point that I think you just made. It's a two-way sync, right? So that as you bring on, say you've converted some significant module and you start utilizing the new C# code for that module, it's generating data that's going into SQL, being synced back across to Datacom. So there is sort of a, with two-way, you're going to have some reference integrity checks both directions, yes?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Any other questions from the committee? There are none. I'll turn it back over to Haley to introduce us on the conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following conditions as presented.
Okay, guys, I think the top three are our standard three. Number four and five, take a moment to read through those. Effectively, we're looking for, as they go through their planning process, a more detailed project plan and work breakdown structure that we'll be able to review and actually can come back up here for review. We plan that in the June timeframe. And then also making sure that there's good coordination on the timing for how the mainframe exit will be coordinated with ADOA, who currently provides the mainframe service to access for the purposes of the service. So making sure that we have all the business parts are connected as that will obviously reduce utilization as they go through this important modernization process. So any questions on the conditions? Okay, if not, we'll step forward. All right, so we'll go ahead and call the question. Anyone wants to offer a motion with regard to the project?
Mr. Chair, this is Eddie. I am moved to approve.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. I'll tell you what, before we go, I ask for the vote. Staff have notified me that we want to go ahead and make sure we noted as part of the process that the required IV&V contract is in place for this project. So that I just want to make sure we've noted that for the record as well. All right. With that, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. That's a unanimous vote. Congratulations on this significant milestone. At least you got to the start line now. and I know it's a big day for you all. So good luck with the project.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks very much. We appreciate your vote.
All right, with that, we'll move on to the next item, but we'll have some familiar faces.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg, and I am an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Health Care Cost Containment System, also known as ACCESS, who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the electronic data interchange, or EDI, functions are a key business operation within ACCESS. Currently, ACCESS uses a combination of tools and service providers for their EDI functions. Due to the cost of operations and procurement constraints, ACCESS is requesting approval for a modernized EDI solution to be developed and implemented within their current system integration platform. The solution will support the overall ACCESS Medicaid plan by providing enhanced capabilities for data interchange between ACCESS and trading partners and reduce manual intervention by the ACCESS teams. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to provide additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Dan Lippert. I am the Assistant Director and Chief Information Officer for the Information Services Division here at ACCESS. With me today, I have Anthony Flott, Chief Technology Officer, and Joshua Worley, the Deputy Assistant Director for the Division of Business and Finance. So I'll start the project introduction with baselining what we consider EDI. It's an electronic data interchange, and it functions as the key business operation within ACCESS. The ACA Act enacted a whole bunch of HIPAA standards by which health plans and Medicaid agencies and Medicare agencies have to abide by in order to exchange data. This is your claims, your encounters, your prior auth, those sorts of things. Those are all required batch transactions. And those are done through EDI. So we currently use a combination of tools to provide that service. When we work negotiating the new contract with the existing vendor, we learn two things. One was, their plan was to increase our rates by about double for the next year. They also would not sign the state terms and conditions. So that led us to need a new technology so that we weren't beholden to another vendor that could raise rates and refuse to sign terms and conditions. So what we did, we turned to technology that has already been approved by this group, our system integrator. And this is the beauty of system integration. We now have a tool that we can unplug the current vendor and plug in new technology to perform those same tasks. So the goal is creation of a platform to allow for more cost-effective processes and ongoing operational efficiencies. And that will be done through the use of system integration. Can we go to the next slide? Because that's where we'll hear the real details of the proposed solution. And for that, I will turn it over to Anthony Flapp.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us again. Our proposed solution for the EDI functionality within Access, as Dan mentioned, is to take this in-house. We plan on building it into our SI, being able to own this, and also implementing modern technology that will not only allow us to do the current transactions required. We have a few of those listed on here. X12, validation, normal translation of transactions for an MMIS system, but also newer technologies like FHIR and HL7, if you're familiar with those. Again, those are coming down the road. We know we need to start setting up for those. So now is a great time to not only take control of this, but build in that additional functionality to meet those HIPAA and CMS rule sets. Again, this solution would completely replace our legacy technology workflows, and it will also eliminate two current vendors that do both the translation and validation part of this for us today. Next slide, please. This system diagram is walking you through a basic EDI workflow. We can get into this as detailed as you want, but I'll keep it at a high level for now so you can see there's two basic ways that these come in. One is through an FTP process, batch process, if you will. The other is through either a web form or a paper claim that comes in. In either scenario, they both get routed to the system, and we do a validation and a translation of those transactions. Once those items have been validated and translated, they then output to a few different sources. One is PMMIS to go through the traditional batch workflows and applications that we have installed on the mainframe. The other is to our EDI data store for the operational and metadata storage. And lastly, it can be to a portal or dashboard. Think an end user who might need to bring up a claim they just submitted, right? So they'll see that it went through the process and it's been validated, et cetera. Next slide, please. We're going to keep using this slide. So this is our SI platform. Again, as Dan had mentioned, you'll notice one key change on this slide that was slightly different from the one we presented earlier is that we're moving EDI from the lower left outside of the SI platform into the middle there in our SI platform. You'll see we're growing out our list of services in our SI platform that are needed amongst all of our external systems that are represented on the edges and also with our Hawaii partners and their systems. They also have an SI platform. You see that down below. For now, as HPMMIS and PMMIS are both maintained by Arizona, the EDI sits in our platform because of where the system of record sits more than anything. So again, the red box is the important one. That's the system in scope for this project. Next slide, please. So you'll see here, again, traditional program structure, much like the one down outlined in the previous project. We have oversight with CMS, DOA, ITEC, and GALVC. We'll have an executive steering committee within the agency. And then we have the governance and compliance parts, which is both IVNB and our internal compliance team and PMO office as well. An assigned access and Hawaii program manager will have the, we'll say, the project oversight of this project. They will both be in charge of making sure the EDI project manager and vendor get their work done, and also any ISD technical SMEs or Hawaii technical SMEs that are needed to get this project done as well. Specifically for the EDI transactions, how we use them, the workflows, the provider community who submits these, that's where we need that ISD technical support. And then again, they'll be working in hand with the project team who will be implementing the solution. Next slide, please. I'm going to throw it over to Dan so he can go through the project responsibilities for this project.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the responsibilities of this project are one of the more interesting ones. Again, you'll see that we're going to be maintaining project contract oversight. But the really important one here is this is not just our environment. We are purchasing the technology. It's our intellectual property. Everything will be owned by us. So we will have complete control. Within the agency, we'll be doing internal organizational change management. The good thing that CMS instituted with the HIPAA transactions is that they're all standards. So the providers don't have to do anything different. They don't have to create new file types or anything like that. They merely have to send it to a new place. So for that, we also have external organizational change management. There's going to be communication plans and things like that, and we're going to have the vendor help us with that. That'll be a shared responsibility. And then the vendor is going to be responsible for configuring the software, for setting up and doing the system design, setting up the Azure tenancy. Next slide. And back to Anthony for timeline.
Thank you, Dan, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Here is our overall project timeline. It's broken up into a couple of chunks, and I'll try to step through it and make sure it will, and hopefully provide some understanding. So one of the important things that Dan highlighted at the beginning of this was we needed to get off of our current solution. We had a timeline that was kind of initiated by a contract renewal, and that timeline is November of this year. And so you'll see that the first chunk of this, the EDI development to replace TIBCO, that would also include all of the, you know, fact gathering, working with SMEs, et cetera. That is to get the system up and running with base functionality by November. The plan is not to renew the current contracts that we have for EDI translation and validation. So we want to get the translation and validation services up and running by November of 24. From there, you'll see that we go to enhanced functionality and stabilization. So enhanced functionality is the additional items that we would like to see in the platform that would really make it fit into our traditional production workflow, right? So this is some of the reporting aspects, some of the ease of use, right? Maybe automating a way to make a change to a certain transaction type or something like that. Again, we'll call it enhanced functionality. It's not going to prevent us from going live, but it's something that would be nice to have so that the production support teams can work within this system for the long term. So you'll see that goes until approximately March of 25. At that point, we have a stabilization month. We've added functionality. We're already basically in production. And so we're stabilizing. And then from there, we go into operations. And that would be full go live with all functionality. You'll notice down below that we have some data submitter training, some UAT. The reason that those kind of align with the base go live is because that's essentially what we would be testing again. Data submitter training would be anybody we need to work with to, you know, again, as Dan mentioned, these are standardized transactions, but there might be a new way they need to submit, a new location they need to submit, et cetera. That is what that is there for, and we'd be reaching out to make sure that support is provided to the community. The UAT testing would be, that's the internal testing to make sure that the translation and validation services are getting data where they need to go, that it's in a format we need it to be in, that it looks correct, etc. That's what that would be. The reason those are, again, left and they align with the base go live is, as I mentioned, that that's when we're really shooting to go live with base functionality. Last but not least, you'll see the project closeout that aligns with the end of the enhanced functionality in the stabilization period. So that would be about May of 25. After the project closeout, obviously we are in full production and the system is considered completely implemented at that point. Next slide. For the project cost, I will throw that over to Dan, or I'm sorry, no, Dan, you get off the hook on this one. Joshua, apologies.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as mentioned in the previous slide, development's going to run through approximately May 2025. Total development cost would be $7.6 million, with annual operational costs after that point just under $1 million per year. Next slide, please. So development costs, as normal, will be shared 90% by the feds, with the remaining 10% of the state match coming from Arizona and Hawaii, split evenly 50-50. And then the ongoing maintenance and operations will be 75% federal, and those costs, the state side, will be split between Arizona and Hawaii. Next slide. And I'm going to pass it back to Dan Lippert.
Members of the committee, how do we define success for this project? One, we have a more streamlined, higher level technology that's implemented. Our current solution is using multiple vendor solutions. This will be consolidating to reduce complexity and putting the ownership back with the state. The next one, move 90% of provider exchanges by November 15th, 2024, and 100% by November 29th. You might wonder, I'm going to anticipate a question here. Why not everybody at November 15th? Well, the vast majority of the people we do business with submit on a very regular basis. Some may submit daily, some weekly, but there are some that don't have to submit very often. They don't see a lot of Medicaid members, or they only have business with us once a year. So we'll have some providers, no matter how much communication we do, that'll wait until the very end to make sure, till they need the service in order to get reestablished with the EDI transaction. So all they have to do is go to a new location. They don't have to change anything about the file. That's why we have this split. We just have, we've been here before, and we just know the provider community tends to sign up for these changes as they need them, and not everybody will need it day one. So another one is a potential cost avoidance after implementation by 20 to 50% year over year. As I said before, the previous vendor raised our rates dramatically and insinuated that they would do the same the following year. So we will be able to have a better control over the increase in costs as well. And then the last one is 100% staff training by 10/31/2024. And I believe that is the end of our presentation. And we're Any here for questions and answers?
All right, committee members, let's get your questions out. Tell you what, Dan, just on the previous slide, that 20 to 50%, that's based on, again, it's not like that was really based on sort of what the current provider indicated their cost structure was going to go be. But if there was no increase, just for kind of context, if they had no planned increase, we know they have planned one, but there was no planned increase, how does your new solution compare and kind of, you know, like for like cost?
Yeah, we expect it to be lower than we're currently paying. Anthony, I believe you did some analysis on that.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Mr. Chairman, so that is actually based on the current prices that we're paying this year. We expect it to be 50% lower than what we're paying this year.
Oh.
Knowing that they have already said they will increase it next year, that's why we put the year over year. So, yeah, that's based on what our current contract is.
All right, thank you. Eddie, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just some clarification. The Access team currently has a EDI vendor that's actually fulfilling the current requirements with HIPAA. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the current vendor that's providing the EDI, we'll call it, solution, is meeting all of the current requirements and objectives today, is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Cook, yes, I'd say that's true.
And a note here, when the Medicaid program replaces discrete system modules and functionality over time, I'm assuming the current EDI vendor is able to make program software changes, whatever, to accommodate that in a timely fashion. Is that correct?
Mr. Cook, I'm not sure I'm following the question.
I'm just looking at the pitch. It says this allows Medicaid programs to replace discrete systems and modules and functionality over time without causing disruption or significant changes to the rest of the enterprise. I was just wondering if the current EDI vendor is meeting those objectives.
I would say the current vendor is meeting those objectives. Anthony, would you disagree?
Thanks, Dan. Mr. Cook, Mr. Chair, yes, they are meeting those objectives as of today. I will note that it is two vendors. And so sometimes in getting them to integrate with each other, we have one vendor for validation, we have one vendor for translation. And that has been a headache prior, as well as we have new standards coming out that we haven't had for many years. I mentioned FHIR and HL7 standards that we need to start accepting. And again, we'd have to get both vendors lined up to do this integration. And so I feel like calling that out, while I wouldn't say it has been, I wouldn't say they can't do it, I wouldn't say it's been easy to do either.
And we'll call the current two EDI vendors. I'm assuming they use this technology with other states around the country that provide or have kind of like a, we'll call it a Medicaid kind of program. Are they kind of like, a best in class kind of vendor for the different states with their EDI solution?
Mr. Cook, I don't know that I'd be able to answer that question if they're best in class. They do provide that service to other Medicaids, as far as I know. But I'd hesitate to say they're best in class. They very well may be.
Is there, I guess the question I would lead to next would be, is there an EDI vendor that's best in class that's in the market today?
Certainly, yes, there would be. And what we're seeing in Medicaid is we're seeing more states take back some of the EDI transactions. This solution that we're recommending isn't terribly unique. We're purchasing the software. We'll be able to do this ourselves. It integrates with our system integrator, so it makes it easier to get the data, things like that. And we're seeing more states look to, when it comes to data exchanges, own that data themselves.
I guess part of my questioning obviously would be, instead of reinventing the wheel, you know, obviously if there was a best in class, you know, solution that's in the market today, you know, I think about the cost of development in house versus the cost of a, you know, vendor that's providing best in class. You know, I'm just looking at, you know, our best investment of dollars, right?
Right. Absolutely. I'm with you now. I'm going to turn it to Anthony in about a minute, because the tools that we'll be using to do the translation and those sorts of things are commonly used. And I think we have done enough research, and I want Anthony to confirm that we could say that the tools that will be used are best in class. Anthony, would you like to add to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Cook. The tool we selected with the help of our vendor is a best-in-class product for states that have taken this on, and not just states, HIEs, health information exchanges, large data, healthcare data warehouses also use this tool. So this is a tool that has had a lot of success with other state Medicaid, but not just Medicaid. Department of Health Services, HIEs, as I mentioned before, and other large health plans who have taken this kind of service in, we're using that same tool set. Hopefully that answers your question. So we're not developing this, quote unquote, from scratch. We are buying a COTS product that we will configure in ways that meet our needs and stand it up in our own cloud platform. So we will be, you know, we will have the support of that COTS vendor on the software, and as they make changes, that is implemented as well with their their software updates.
All right, thank you for answering my questions. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Eddie. Any other questions from the committee? Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, this is less a question for Access, I think, but and more maybe for JR and your team. When I was looking at the ITAC site, the slideshows, which I always find very helpful as a non-IT professional, I think it's missing some pages on the website. The link only has a couple of the pages. And similarly for the last Access thing, the page only has a couple of pages. So if someone could just check and make sure those get fully uploaded, that would be helpful.
Thanks for calling that out, Jeff. We'll make sure that staff goes back and confirms that the site reflects the materials that were presented today.
Awesome. Thanks.
Any other questions or comments? All right, Haley, I'll hand it back to you.
I just wanted to clarify, does Eddie still have his hand up?
No.
I am very sorry for putting it up.
Just want to make sure before I continue. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, ACID is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following conditions as presented.
Okay. So again, we have our standard three. We will go ahead and note, in this case, the IVNV contract is not in place. So we've added the condition that Access will follow through and get that contract in place within 90 days of the start of the project if it is to be approved here. So we'll continue to comply with the IVNV requirements. Any questions on the conditions? If not, we'll move ahead. And I will take a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chair, this is Jeggy. I will approve based on the act conditions.
All right. Thank you, Jeggy. Do we have a second?
Second. This is Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, that's another unanimous vote. Dan, you got another project.
I'm ready.
Go get it. All right, we are moving into our next item, which is a change request that comes to us from the Department of Water Resources.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Water Resources, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project change request. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on August 17th, 2022, ADOA Asset approved the original project investment justification, page number WC22002, for the Arizona Department of Water Resources to start their application modernization project. The Department of Water Resources is seeking approval on a change request for time, budget, and scope in order to keep the project on track towards a finished product that is essential to conducting agency business. I will turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions that you may have.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here in front of the committee today to present this change request and the underlying reasons for it. By way of introduction, my name is Scott Saline. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Water Resources. I also have with me today Lynn Smith, Deputy Director from ADWR, as well as Matt Marshall, Chief Information Officer at ADWR. I'll be doing the bulk of the presenting today. Matt and Lynn are available to answer questions once we've gotten through the slides. Could you advance the slides, please? We wanted to start out by providing a brief summary of the project itself and why it's necessary. Our application modernization project will replace 10 mission-critical applications that, in some cases, are over two decades old. These systems support major functions within the department and are used by divisions and sections across the entire agency. They impact our wells, groundwater management, surface water, and adjudications operations, amongst others. I share this to just reinforce that these are crucial applications. Our application modernization project is going to address a variety of issues that we currently have. These applications that we are replacing are written in a legacy development language, Delphi. We struggle to find support for this language currently. In addition, we currently don't have a uniform way for customers to interact with ADWR. We have a lot of paper-based processes that require a lot of data entry by hand after the fact. And then finally, only 23% of our services are available online, and only 30% of our transactions are performed completely online. We're seeking to increase those figures to above 70% through this project. Could you advance the slide, please? We approached ITAC for PIDGE approval to build an online customer portal utilizing the Salesforce platform and to modernize these applications. The timeline for the project was September of 2022 to June 2024. We received proposals from four potential system integrators, and their responses ranged from $1.1 million to $8.3 million for integration costs alone. Ultimately, we signed a scope of work with a vendor for $1.8 million. The total five-year development cost for the initial PIDGE was $2.9 million. ITAC approved our PIDGE for this project in August of 2022, as Bob mentioned. Next slide, please. Now, the purpose of these next few slides is to briefly walk you through a timeline from initial PIDGE approval to where we are today. In August of 2022, the PIDGE was approved, and in September, we kicked off the project. Discovery occurred during October and November, and now I will skip forward to December of 2022. There was an election to create a new area within the state where groundwater use is regulated, called an active management area, or an AMA for short. After those election results, we started discussions with our integration vendor to create a customer portal to receive the applications that would start coming in after the creation of this new AMA. So that's the event chronicled in December of 2022, the start of the irrigation rights customer portal sub-project with our previous integrator. I'm going to move forward to January of 2023. Since the beginning of the project, we had been having some concerns with the quality of the work performed by our vendor. And at this point, we elevated those concerns internally to high risk. What were some of those issues that we were having? I've listed some off to the right-hand side, the upper half of the slide. There was a really high rework rate with some of the deliverables that were provided by the original integrator. We had minimal design discussion and documentation and incomplete development documentation. We communicated these concerns to Asset in February of 2023 and informed them of the potential need to pause the project to address them. And ultimately, in March of 2023, we did pause development. During that pause, we did several things listed off to the right on the bottom half. We had some quality discussions with our integrator. During some of these discussions, it was mentioned that the integrator was going to need additional resources, about $2 million, to carry out the project with a reduced scope. And then finally, during the pause, we retained Salesforce to perform an evaluation of the integrator's architecture and design. While the previous vendor was receptive to our concerns, we did not see sufficient improvement in the worked product. And in July of 2023, we notified the previous integrator of our intent to terminate the contract for the main application modernization project. In August of 23, after notifying the integrator, the previous integrator did deliver on the grandfather's rights customer portal sub-project. And also SPO sent a termination letter to the previous integrator for the main project. Could you go to the next slide, please? After parting ways with our previous vendor, we were disappointed that we had to make a vendor change, but we were confident that we had made the right decision early in the project before things went too far down a road that we didn't want to go down. We were at a pretty crucial decision point for how to proceed, and after some internal deliberation, ADWR determined the best path forward would be to retain Salesforce professional services to complete the project. Before moving forward with this plan, we presented the plan and collaborated with Asset, SPO, and with OSPB throughout the late summer months of 2023 to develop the plan. We discussed the plan to change integrators, the budgetary implications, and how and when to move forward with the page change request process. After discussing the plan with all stakeholders, ADWR signed an agreement with Salesforce Professional Services in August of 2023. Next slide, please. So we'll go back to the timeline format real quick. In August, we signed the contract, and discovery began and went throughout September and October. In November of 2023, we continued discussing the PIDGE process with Asset during that time. And based on their guidance, we submitted a PIDGE change request in November of 2023, which ultimately required an IV&D vendor. We began sprints with Salesforce in December of 2023 and signed an IV&V agreement with Gartner earlier this month. Next slide, please. This slide shows an overview of our change request. We are requesting a slight extension of timeline from June of 2024 to September of 2024. In terms of scope, we're seeking to add the architectural evaluation and a signature solution to our scope, and our development budget will increase from $2.9 million to $6.3 million. Now, the bottom half of this slide shows the reasons for this change order, which we've sort of described to this point. We're seeing cost increases related to the integrator change. We have some additional licensing requirements and adding the signature solution. We're seeing a slight change of timeline, and just to reiterate, we are adding IV&V to this project. Could you advance the slide, please? What you're looking at currently is an analysis of the development cost for this project under the original PIDGE and under this current change request. On the left-hand side, we have the costs for the previous PIDGE that was approved in August of 2022. We had our integrator cost for about $1.8 million, and our software licensing, which is Salesforce and MuleSoft, for about $1.1 million. Altogether, these costs add up to $2.9. On the right-hand side, we have the development costs listed under the change request. I'm not going to read the amount for each one of these. We have the previous integrator milestones before we changed our vendor, our software licensing for Salesforce and MuleSoft, the architectural evaluation that we underwent with Salesforce, the irrigation rights customer portal subproject. We had some contracted resources with working for us on this project. They've since been converted to FTE positions, but we spent about $75K on through Acro. Salesforce integration costs, some business analyst hours that'll be used to create a user training manual, amongst other things. Our IVNV costs, our estimated signature solution costs, and the Copado software that was not previously considered. These costs all add up together to about $6.3 million. Next slide, please. What you're looking at now is the five-year listing of total project costs under the original PIDGE, separated by category. You'll see that development costs were a total of $2.9 million. Next slide. This is the five-year breakout of project costs under the change request. The categories are broken out a little bit more here. First of all, first row is we have payments made to the previous integrator. That totals just over $350,000. Next, we have all other professional and outside service contractor payments. Next is the IVNV costs for $275,000, and then our licensing and maintenance fees for about $4 million. Added together, the development cost over the 5 years is $6.3 million. Could you advance? So ADWR has submitted a budget request for an additional $2.5 million in APF monies to complete the project. The source of the $2.5 million would be the agency's Water Resources Fund, which as of today has a balance of about $5 million. This slide shows our budget position if that $2.5 million request is ultimately included in the budget passed later this spring. I just call your attention that our APF total here at the top of the slide would be increased by $2.5 million to $4.2 million total. Next slide. This slide shows the funding for the project if the additional $2.5 million to the APF does not occur. We're committed to completing the project, and we would leverage our operating appropriations and other funds that we have to find the money to complete the project, because it's crucial to our agency that we complete it. Now, in order to find monies in our operating appropriation to complete development, we'd entertain a number of solutions, including pausing all merit and spot increases temporarily, pausing IT equipment refresh, and even potentially instituting a hiring delay to generate the savings necessary. I don't want to sugarcoat it. These would be painful actions to take if we had to, but this project is such a high priority to our agency that we would be willing to do them in order to complete it if necessary. Next slide, please. In summary, this table shows the change in our development costs under the change request. Actual spend to date has been $2.8 million, and we project an additional $3.5 million through the end of the project for a total of $6.3 million. Compared to our originally approved development cost of $2.9 million, this represents an increase of $3.4 million. And the bottom half of the slide provides some greater detail about development costs incurred to date. The total integration payments to our previous integrator, including the AMA portal subproject, is just over $350,000. Integration payments to Salesforce to date are about $1 million. Licensing for Salesforce and MuleSoft, about $1.1 million. The architectural evaluation with Salesforce, about $277,000, and our contracted cost at just under $75,000. Next slide, please. This is the original project timeline broken out by project phase. I'll just call your attention that the project was originally scheduled to go live June of 2024, the green dot down at the bottom. Next slide. This is the new timeline for the project under the change order. I'd point out that the new timeline has two phases instead of one. The go-live for phase one is scheduled for May 2024, and go-live for phase two occurs in August of 2024, with project closeout occurring in September of 2024. Could you advance? These are the revised project milestones. We show currently the kickoff and phase one of discovery at 100% completion. And phase one sprints are 50% complete, with the remaining milestones yet to come. Project closeout occurring in September of 24. Next slide, please. This concludes our slide content. I'd be happy to entertain any questions that the committee has, and also Lynn and Matt are also here to help with any questions that you may have.
All right, thank you, Scott. Committee, we'll go ahead and open up for questions. Go ahead, Eddie.
JR, this is probably a question to you, just for helping me understand from a state contract perspective. When a vendor obviously signs a contract with any of our state agencies and they're not able to meet the contract, and obviously they've been being paid for their services, and we find that they're maybe in violation of the contract, do we, does the state provide a penalty to these vendors? Or remove them off the vendor approved list? I mean, how do we assure that we're getting, you know, obviously through an RFP process, you know, the best quality vendor, and if they're not meeting those contractual agreements? I'm just kind of curious.
No, good question, Eddie. Chuck, I saw you put your hand up, so I'll let you, if you want to speak to Eddie's question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cook. Excellent question. What I can say, happens traditionally is when agencies run into issues similar to maybe discussed today, there's vendor performance report processes, demand for assurance processes, they're all built in. In this case, when the agency began to experience issues, they did their internal review, right? They also communicated with ADOA Asset and ADOA SPO on best processes to move forward, followed the advice of the State Procurement Office. I apologize for using an acronym I didn't say out loud first. SPO is the State Procurement Office inside of ADOA. So the short answer is each one is a little unique. So there are ways we put it on the record what's occurred. That record can stay around within the procurement process. So as the vendor seeks new state business, it can be discovered by new potential clients. But each one is settled through standard procurement processes and within the State Procurement Office. And this agency took the guidance from that office and work through those both procurement and legal hurdles in this project. So hopefully I've given you enough clarification to let you know that there are things that we do to put poor performance on the record so that other potential clients would know before they contract.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, Chuck.
And I think I would probably add that part of that process that the procurement team will walk through in partnership with the agency is going to be looking at, you know, that question you raised of cost and what got paid and what would, you know, we'll say what is fair and appropriate under the circumstances. So I'll say I'm going to, you know, that's in the procurement's court, and I trust that they navigate that process with the best intentions of both protecting the interests of the state and being fair. So any other questions? I'll add before we go ahead, I'll just say I'll say pleasantly surprised that for the what looks like a fairly harrowing experience and from a project standpoint that you're not seeing more than what looks like about a 60, maybe 70 day project delay, you know, from your original timeline. That surprises me. So I'll say that feels good. In terms of just from a timeline perspective, obviously I know that the you know, the costs are more than what you expected. Mr. Byers, please.
Yeah, are you using like Salesforce, the corporation, their vendor, or some of their licensed vendors that they certify?
And to clarify, Mr. Byers, that's for the services.
Yes. I know you're using their software, but for the professional services to program this, who are you using to do that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are using Salesforce, the company.
Salesforce themselves. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Okay. If not, I'll turn it back to you, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Asset is recommending that the change request be approved with the original conditions as presented.
Okay, any questions on the conditions or any discussion? If not, we'll move forward and I will take a motion with regard to the project. I'm sorry, the change request.
Mr. Chair, it's Eddie. I move to approve.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
Ben Henry, second.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you, Scott and team. Good luck, and look forward to hearing about your successful implementation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, appreciate it.
All right, we are into informational updates, so these are non-voting items. First up is Department of Education.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Justin Modulin. I am an engagement manager for the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Education who will now introduce themselves and provide the committee with an informational update regarding the overall status of the Child Nutrition Program Web Replacement Project.
Thank you, Justin, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Elizabeth Neely. I am the Chief Information Officer for the Arizona Department of Education, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce some of the team members and stakeholders that I have here with me today. We have Melissa Connor. She's our Senior Deputy Associate Superintendent and the product owner. We also have Kara Alexander, who is also the product owner. Myself, we have Kieran Nero, who's the Director of our IT Program Management Department, Suchi Narla, who is the project manager of the project, Sid Franderson, who represents the Link, he is our vendor and partner in our project, and Amy Besnage, who is also with Link and the Director of Professional Services. So that is the project team. Next slide, please. I wanted to say hello. Welcome to the new members as well. We appreciate the time that you give to this endeavor. We're here today to ensure that ADE continues keeping the committee up to date and informed on the process being made on the project since the ITAC meeting in September of 2023 when we did our reset. So the project is a customized build, for those of you who don't know, for the Child Nutrition Program Information and Claims System. The system will meet the federal program requirements around the application and the renewal process and the claims and submission and payable and receiving tracking. A couple of the milestones from Link to review with you today. As of 2-6, milestone one and the training sessions are 100% completed. Milestone two is 93% complete, and milestone three is 44% complete. So overall, the project is currently 73% complete. Next slide, please. So I'm going to go over a little bit of the project timeline. As indicated previously, you will see that milestone one is completed. That is in the green. Currently, milestone two and three are in progress. And we do have identified that we potentially will have a short delay. It would not impact the overall timeframe of the project, but we do have that identified as potential. The blue items have not yet begun yet, and they do include the MVP go live, which is scheduled for July 1st. I believe that the next 30 to 45 days for the project team will be telling as the team makes its final push to that milestone one go live date, and then we would be back to see you with an update on the progress that we have made towards that date. Next slide, please. Additional updates to review regarding the project. Milestone one delays included bugs that were found in QA, delaying the UAT testing until 1-4. The time that we had spent on the bug resolution obviously are always also impacted the training schedule. And as a result, the project health was changed to at risk in December in our status report. Next slide, please. some of the identified risks and issues that we want to share with you today. Excuse me. Two risks we've got posing a risk to our July 1st is the reprioritization of items in milestone 1 and 2, which may potentially delay the delivery date in milestone 4. I'm going to have to take a sip of my water. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Okay, that's better. Ooh, I'm going to start over one more time, please. We've identified that additional findings during UAT potentially pose a risk to the July 1 go live date. And the reprioritization of items in milestone 1 and 2 may potentially delay the delivery date of milestone 4. There's one issue currently logged for the project, and that is due to the findings during UAT. The issue has impacted the project by delaying milestone 2 and 3 features and delayed the start of the pilot window. Mitigation plans have been identified and are being followed for the issue. The project team is working on prioritizing features to other milestones and considering moving the low priority bugs potentially to the last milestone. Link has also participated in the mitigation strategies, and they've implemented some additional reviews in their software development lifecycle, and they're going to monitor aggressively the defect rates. Link has also added additional resources, which includes a senior quality resource who is a state nutrition subject matter expert. So we at ADE are very excited about that additional resource that Link is providing. Next slide, please. As I indicated earlier in December, the project status was identified and we raised it to at risk. You will see the details that I had discussed and the risks and issues are in red on the slide deck that you are seeing. Currently, we have milestone 2 user stories that we have put in yellow, and it is due to the potential impact of the project and the schedule. The team has really continued to see progress since we met in September and we kind of level set the work. We're continuously working with the vendor, ensuring the work effort is identified, includes level of effort for any bugs identified. So we are seeing progress and excited about the progress that we are seeing. So what I'm going to do right now for the next 2 slides is I'm going to turn it over to Sid from Link, and he's going to review their 2 burn down charts with you.
All righty. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. So the next 2 slides, as Beth introduced, are burn down charts for 2 teams that are working on this project with the ADE. This first slide is showing our core 2 team that we refer to that is working on the majority of the brand new custom work. As far as the full project burn down on the left, we are still making steady progress with about 275 user stories remaining to complete the work for this project. And milestone 2, which is due this Friday. This currently says 7 stories remaining, but I'm happy to report that as of this morning, that is 1 story remaining that should be delivered completely on time. Next slide, please. And this second slide is for our core team, which is our secondary team also working on the project that mainly focuses on updates to our legacy system that is also part of this project. And again, progress is showing to be pretty steady for being on time for the full project completion. If anything, pretty early for full project completion on that side. And there are, as of this morning, 3 stories remaining for that milestone 2. Which is due to ADE's UAT environment again this Friday. And with that, I will pass things back over to Beth. Thank you.
Thank you, Sid. And thank you for the update. I'm glad to hear the progress that you've made. This is the financial slide for the project. And as I reported the last time I gave you guys an update, there currently has been no change to the project costs, actual or estimated. And payments to Link have still not been resumed. So no change financially for the project. Next slide, Q&A. So thank you for your time, and I'll open it up for Q&A.
Okay, committee members, any clarifying questions? Again, I'll remind you, not a voting item, but you do have the opportunity to ask questions if you have them. I'll go one quick one with you, Beth, which is, it's not totally clear to me what you, at this point, what you would forecast as a timeline shift based on where you are. And I saw some, you know, the estimated markers, but that only went kind of halfway down. If things do, you know, if you actually do realize that delay, do you not expect it to hit all the following milestones as well?
I think that is why I wanted to kind of identify this next 30 to 45 days, I think is going to kind of solidify that for us.
All right.
That's why we put potential there, and logically, right, common sense tells us that if there's major pushes, that end date is going to move. But I think we wanted to kind of leave a potential, not make any major adjustments yet, and let this team knock out this next 30 to 45 days. And then I think when we report back to you, we would have a more solid answer for you of the potential impact.
Oh, very good. I appreciate it. I think it's helpful to get these updates so we can kind of get some advanced view into what could be potentially coming back. Any other questions or comments from the committee? All right. Thanks, Beth. Thanks, Sid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
All right. Next informational update comes from the Department of Administration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record and the recording, my name is Charles Brown. I am State Deputy CIO for ADOA, but I do go by Chuck, as most of you know. I will be giving the update on behalf of ADOA today regarding the asset performance audit and where we're at in responding to the recommendations from the auditor. So next slide, please. With me today is Halei Fardy. She is the director of our EPMO office and our strategic oversight, which is the staff that supports you within my area of business. Also, Lindsay is here observing as our project manager, walking us through this process if we need her. Next slide, please. So for those members of the committee that were not here back in July, the Auditor General's Office published a performance audit report of assets IT oversight activities. And as many of you may know, through that report, they provide a list of recommendations after their findings to address their findings. And in this report, we had two specific findings, one related to insufficient oversight, another related to adherence with IVV requirements. Output from those two findings was 10 specific recommendations, which we have been working through a project to address since July of last year. Can we go to that slide, please? As we do with most things, we're IT staff here that support ITAC. We turned this process into a project itself, took it through our quality assurance measures, developed the project team, and have been walking this path. We are currently in our process of evaluating our work from all of our process improvement and development. The auditors have notified us this month that they are starting their six-month follow-up. So we're excited to see that their response to the work that they've done. But I'm going to walk you through some of that work. After we engage them in the follow-up, we expect to get a report back that will give us some insight into how we did with the things we've implemented, and hopefully some insight on the things that we're still working on in process. And then we will re-baseline this project based on feedback from that six-month follow-up. For those of you who aren't aware, there is an 18-month follow-up that happens after that. Next slide, please. So here is a breakdown of where we're at. In traditional fashion, we took the 10 recommendations and turned them into 18 to help us work through the project. I'm sure you like to see that. IT likes to break out things very specifically. I'm happy to report of the 18 that we broke those 10 recommendations into, we have fully implemented 13 of those, and we are in process on the last five. As it says here on the slide, the last five hit a few key areas, one of which is the process in which we are going to validate the project expenditures reported to us by the agencies for every single project, not just our APF. The other recommendation we're looking to address is a recommendation of how we are going to implement temporary suspensions on projects, either by asset or by the committee ITAC itself. We have developed a draft plan for that, gone through some modifications on what it might look like to identify those projects, score them, take them to a committee, and produce a recommendation out of that committee. After the first review, we went back and decided we wanted a couple more steps in between the evaluation by the staff, the committee, and then just the recommendation going forward. And we're in the process of developing a corrective action plan alternative to temporary suspension that'll be presented. So once we get that process a little farther along, that'll be something that we bring in front of you to look at. However, temporary suspension of an IT project, right, can be very impactful, not only for the agency, but the vendors involved and the idea of getting to the needed solution in the end. So we want to make sure we do a thorough review of how to execute something like this the correct way. And then lastly, we are working on the final pieces of recommendation around IV&V. We've updated the IV&V policy that I'll cover a little bit later on in the presentation. But we're working through the process that splits out the duties among three partners. So there's three groups inside Asset that work on IV&V. We have our IV&V consulting group. We also have our oversight team and our engagement manager team. So they're all involved. Next slide, please. So focusing on IV&V, we obviously have our statute that guides us through the process that are for all development projects over $5 million. The requirement that the contract be in place before ITAC approval, as well as some other factors. We have developed the IV&V policy and published that. It's on our website. We have links inside this presentation that you can click on and go read that policy if you'd like. And again, like I just mentioned earlier, we are finalizing the processes that'll be involved in that. One of the nuances that we had to deal with within the audit and our own internal processes is like you just saw with one of the access projects, when we have federally funded projects, we have a cart and horse, chicken and egg type scenario. Agencies can't sign their contract when they're federally funded until they have all their state approvals. ITAC's one of the state approvals, and then we have a statute that says you have to have the contract in place, right? So we've worked out conditions, things like that, that we put forward to you that you see on a regular basis to try and address those issues. But like I said, we predict within March we'll have the final processes done and we'll be able to call that recommendation complete. Next slide, please. In regards to PIDGs, project investment justifications, we have updated our PIDG policy. It only required some minor changes to respond to the audit, but then we had some major changes we had to make to our standard, which is a subset of the policy, as well as updating our status reporting and closeout policy. So over the past month, the teams worked very hard to implement these. I'm happy to report they're fully implemented policy standards, as well as all the processes that the teams have to walk, both from the team perspective and the agency expectation perspective. So these have all been done and are fully implemented and tracked, and we're developing the report right now to get back to the auditors as part of the six-month follow-up. Next slide, please. One thing I should mention, while it wasn't part of the asset specific performance report, ADOA was going through its sunset review process at the same time. And one of those findings agency-wide were about making sure we have the right disclosures in place. So you all do those conflict of interest forms we ask you to sign. Also, we have some training. So you should have been noticed that you were going to be asked to complete some training if you haven't done it. We are working on, for those members that are not state employees, how you'll be doing that. So if you haven't received it already, in the near future, you're going to be getting an explanation of how you're going to engage with our online system to go through this training. Again, this is not just for the ITAC committee. This is for all committees that participate in duties that ADOA oversees. So if you have any questions about that, happy to answer it. But like I said, we'll be sending you communications outside of the public meeting that let you know how and when to complete these activities. Next slide, please. Okay. I'm trying to stay with my timeline. It looks like I got about 5 minutes maybe for Q&A. Again, I know we have some members that were not here when this whole audit process started and went through. There's documents for you to follow up and read on. We'll be presenting on our progress regularly in front of ITAC as we go through. Anything we need your specific approval on, we'll bring it for a voting item. I don't foresee any right now, but as your supporting staff, we want to make sure we expose our policies, our standards, and our processes that we walk the agencies through before they get to the point where they're presenting these decks of information and asking for your approval. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, and open it up for questions, if you would.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. So, committee, any questions or clarifying comments? If there are none, we'll continue. As Chuck said, we'll continue to provide updates on our progress in closing these items out and continue to invite your input on anything that you observe that we can do to help improve our processes. So with that, that completes the items that we would be presenting today. And there are three items that are just written updates only. You'll have the opportunity to review those. Let us know if you have comments on any of those items. Our next meeting is scheduled for March 20th, same time. And we'll look forward to seeing you then. And with that, if there are no further or last comments from anyone, I will call the meeting to a close. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right, staff, let's go ahead and end the streaming and the recording.